99.7 FM and online at oldhamcommunityradio.com are featuring all that's best from the King of Instruments. This is Community Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholme.
Hello again and welcome to this edition of Community Keyboards on air and online. As ever, over the next hour I'll have music from the King of Instruments in all its guises, and I'll be joined throughout this programme by the team who have produced a successful documentary entitled Organ Stops, Saving the King of Instruments. James Dawson, who occasionally listens in, I'm delighted to say got in touch to give me some background to the project. James normally makes documentaries for the BBC or Channel 4, and wanted to make a film that uses pipe organs as a sort of lens to look at our rapidly changing society. Well, after failing to get the BBC interested in commissioning a film, he decided to make it anyway, which has taken 4 years to complete, mainly due to COVID, and it's now playing at film festivals in the USA, and hopefully eventually here too in the UK, and it will be available on a pay-per-view basis online. I'll be giving you all the details later, so a pen and paper will definitely be useful. Martin Renshaw has spent his life playing and building pipe organs, but nowadays he dedicates most of his time to rescuing them. There are about 50 churches closing every year, and half the organs in them are worth saving. Of course, once the centre of British culture, pipe organs are now largely neglected and unloved. Fiona Paquette is a professionally trained multi-instrumentalist and has been sharing her passion of classical music at the East London School of Music, which she's managed for many years. Perceptions of classical music being exclusively for just a privileged few are being widely challenged by her school in Hackney, and with over 25 years teaching experience, Fiona from Bow East London has witnessed firsthand the benefits a music school can have on the wider community. Believe me then, you'll enjoy my conversation with all three guests who recently joined me via Zoom after Simon Preston plays Henry Purcell's popular and familiar trumpet tune on the organ of Westminster Abbey. Well, James, I can remember over the past four decades now that I've been involved in the organ world that many people have desperately tried to feature the King of Instruments on national TV. And to be honest, although there's been a few small breakthrough cameo spots, I really can't recall anything more than the Howard Goodall series, and that's many years ago now. So as a long-established filmmaker, why did you decide to produce a documentary on an all too easily dismissed subject such as the pipe organ?
Ian, thanks for having us on. I've always wanted to do a film about music, and when I it sort of came to me a bit when I went to St Paul's Cathedral, and I think it was a concert that Julian Weir was giving, and I heard the pipe organ there, and I was quite shocked, really, in my own way. I thought, this is something I remember as a boy enjoying, but not quite in the same way. And I thought I knew so little about this instrument. I didn't even know how many pipes the thing had. And it made me think again about the instrument and what might be done with it. And then when I started looking into pipe organs, I realised that there was a big crisis in this country and lots of them were under threat and were being destroyed. So I thought, when I thought about it, I thought there might be a way of using the instrument as a sort of lens through which you could look at this very rapid change in our society, the way that secularisation was happening. And there were lots of people being left in the wake of this. And I thought they were really interesting. And I wanted to give them a voice. That's how it came about.
Mm. I mean, I've been lucky to see the documentary. It's worth saying, actually, James, that the trailer to it is online. And it certainly does give an overview of sort of a flavour of the programme. I think it's fair to say also that you've approached this project from and I had to think about the word here, a very humanistic standpoint, how it really impacts on individuals and communities, particularly when a church is forced to close and the organ just lies there in disuse. What did you learn as an enthusiast as well as a producer about the people whose lives you featured?
Well, I learned really that this instrument and the pipe organ music that they listened to and created was really important to them. Really, really important to them. It was a sort of solace. It was a joy. And when they lost their instrument, it was losing a big chunk of their lives. And that's what we tried to do in the film, is sort of thread through stories about people who are either rescuing pipe organs or who are losing them. And it's sort of, they're sort of a community and all united by this love of pipe organs. So I found that there's a fantastic lady called Blanche Beer, who's in the film, who was 96 when we made the film. And she'd been playing her pipe organ for 80 years in East Stanley in Durham. And she was an extraordinary woman. And her stories of being a Pitt Village organist were just tremendous, and it feels like it's the heart of what the film's about.
Absolutely, entirely agree there. Yes, Martin, you're the organ builder in the programme, and you've been doing it for many a year now. You've almost become the sort of the GP on the rounds, seeing sick patients. I don't know whether that's what they do these days, but it must be a bit disheartening when you're approached to consider removing pipe organs of all sizes up and down the land that are kind of destined for the skip. How does that make you feel, and what's your intention to do about it?
Well, it's perfectly true. There's always a backstory to it, all these calls to look at the organ. The church has closed, the church has moved, the people have died off, and people are actually remarkably desperate about the future of that organ. I can remember another one up in Durham, actually several years ago now, about 10 or even 12 years ago, where after I looked at the organ and said to them, after about half an hour looking at it in general ways and looking for the features that I knew it would have to make it useful to transplant, I said, yes, I will take it. The relief was enormous. They almost whoop for joy that their organ will not go in the skip, as one just down the road had done just a few years before. But the terrible thing at the other end of the scale, of course, is that sometimes I have to say, no, I can't take it. I have nowhere to put it. It's too big. It's not the right sort of organ that can be easily moved, easily restored, or restored at least within a reasonable price range.
Sure.
And I say, no, I can't take it. And I know at that point that they're going to have to put up with either somebody coming in and taking bits and pieces, and then they've got to put the rest in a skip themselves, and that happens very often, I'm afraid, or that they'll simply sort of shut the door and let the developer do what he likes with it. And at that point, of course, one has no idea what will happen to the organ.
I suppose there's this obvious perception that pipe organs are expensive. Well, it's not a perception, it's a reality, I guess, isn't it? That pipe organs are expensive to maintain, and perhaps only the larger churches and cathedrals can raise the funding to preserve that kind of sizable instrument. Now, the documentary was produced and interrupted, obviously, by the pandemic and places of worship, rather like the many other arenas, and I suppose I can use a theatrical term, remained dark throughout the lockdowns and therefore unable to collect their normal level of income. Do you fear, Martin, for the long-term sort of post-COVID survival of some of these great instruments
Well, there's actually several cathedrals have spent a lot of money on their organs in recent years. And as you say, their income has dropped off to almost nothing. And just at the moment, a lot of them are cutting back on their music in a pretty severe way, which is wrong-headed, actually, because in any polls or any surveys of people who go to churches, and most importantly, cathedrals, and there was such a survey not long ago, one of their prime reasons for going to the cathedrals was not just to have peace and quiet and get away from normal life, which is a fairly strong reason for going to any church, but for cathedrals in particular, they wanted to hear the music. And they said they don't mind what it is, even if it's the organist practicing. The fact that there is music flooding the cathedral was a great thing for their well-being. And if cathedrals lose sight of that and start firing all their musicians, then they're going to lose a very important part of their attraction. But how they're going to actually make their budgets work, I really don't know, because if they spent a few million pounds in recent times on their choir and organ, you know, they've got a big hole to fill up. And of course, the easiest way is to get rid of staff. And I know some cathedrals have got rid of up to half their staff, which they've accumulated over the last years. But in fact, the problem isn't there, really. The problem is in the other 40,000 churches yes. where there are organs yeah. or might be organs still. And they're all over the country, and they are having real problems, because if they do reopen, they're going to reopen to so few services that the organs are going to be used very rarely, if at all. So people actually stop having the chance of hearing organs, and I think that's the real problem. They'll simply go out of mind. So with our new trust, I hope, one of the most important things we're going to do is actually to maintain organs, to resuscitate them and get them going again, so that people do have the chance of listening to them. And that way, we can push the profile of organs up in the public domain, because they're sinking lower and lower in the public perception. People don't hear them. They don't go to the churches. The BBC broadcasts them less and less often. There are not many programmes about them. There used to be regular programmes of cinema organ music, of organ recitals on Radio 3 and so on, but they've all completely disappeared. Apart from the odd programme here and there on television, which might happen to mention them, and poor old cathedrals, choral, or at least cathedrals and colleges, choral evensong, which still carries on somehow on Radio 3, there's not much chance of hearing an organ.
From a recording given to me in 1990 made by David Wild using one of the highest quality microphones available at the time, and which comes with a warning in the liner booklet that care should be taken with reproduction equipment, otherwise damage may occur, that was Dr. Francis Jackson at the organ of York Minster with Edward Cuthbert Bairstow's Prelude in C. Well, do stay with me for some more music and conversation after the break.
You're listening to Community Keyboards on Oldham Community Radio 99.7 FM with Ian Wolstenholme.
And welcome back to Community Keyboards, where this time I'm catching up with the contributors to a new documentary produced by James Dawson. Here's a short arrangement of Be Still, performed by way of introducing Fiona Paquette. Let me bring Fiona in here. Fiona, you've been very patient. Welcome along to the programme. You were featured in the film as someone determined to find a pipe organ of suitable size, with Martin's help, for your church congregation. Now, I thought that very fairly included in the documentary was a counter-argument for the need to spend thousands of pounds on an old pipe instrument when for a fraction of that price you can install an electronic pipeless organ to the untrained ear, which can produce much the same effect. Now, I can see you getting angrier and angrier on our Zoom call by those words that I've just uttered. Go on, give it to me straight. You're a highly trained musical ear, of course. What are your thoughts on these digital doppelgangers?
That's like the part of the sin that is. Yeah, so I mean, for me, ever since my young age of 30, it's about longevity and the quality of sound, you know, as opposed to something that's inferior.
Yes.
For example, and when I was about 8, my parents bought me a nice little, you know, those old home organs, not the one with the pedals, you know, the ones with all the little buttons and stuff like that. And I was happy with that. But fast forward to when I was 13 and I was like, I used to sit in church and listen to the musicians play. And I saw this monstrous instrument and had all these pipes at the front and stuff. And I was thinking, how comes my organ doesn't sound like that? and that's when the interest sort of, I started getting curious, you know. And I would go up and I would, after the services, I would go up and look at the musicians and I saw a pedal board at the feet and I'm thinking, I'm looking at the pipes and all questions started going in my head really. So, you know, from then my preference kind of changed, you know. Obviously the electronic organ that I had at home didn't last very long, which kind of illustrates the point, you know, because like a pipe organ is built to last for a lifetime. So if you had a pipe organ, say, lasted for over 100 years, but you had a church who had a series of digital, how many digital instruments would they need to buy for those years, basically? It'd be quite a few. For example, the one that we have at my church, it's a Viscount Oratorio. And, yeah, we've had it for over 25 years, but not without its issues, myriad of issues. Yeah, we had a pipe organ before that, but it was that the church got rid of it. And I think it was mainly down to musical ignorance, really. So
I guess that the, and I think you mentioned this in a comment to me earlier, that obviously when it comes to the digital instruments, which are, there's no getting away from it, like anything digital, it's not in any way the same as the real thing. But the need to update it, as we're all used to with our computers and our various digital appliances around the home, if you don't keep on top of it or if you don't keep it up to date, then it doesn't necessarily perform as well as perhaps it should do. And I guess the same, irrespective of the sales aspect, as you mentioned to me off air, is such that people will want to try to always have you acquire, install, maintain the very, very latest gadgets and gizmos on it, and it must be frustrating from that point of view.
Yeah, because I'm in IT as well, and as you know, technologies evolve very, very rapid, very frequently, and you know, and with these type of organs, digital organs, you know, components, they last for a certain amount of time, and then you know, then they get obsolete, yeah. And then you can't find the parts again. You know, it's just revolving, like, you know, chasing your tail.
Sure. Fiona, you run the hugely successful East London School of Music as well, which covers the whole range of talents and instruments, for that matter. I was interested to read that, and I think this figure's increased now, that at around 70-80% of students are under the age of 25. I wonder, out of that group, what's the appetite like for learning a keyboard instrument?
The appetite's quite high, actually. And even this year, despite the pandemic COVID situation, we've had an influx of young people signing up, especially in the from BMA, BAME backgrounds. And we have around 15 people have signed up to learn the pipe organ.
Wow.
Yeah, which will hopefully commence during September, because I'm in talks with Simon Williams from the Royal College of Organists. And when he saw the pipe organ recital last year, he was quite amazed, actually. He asked me a question. He said, how is it that you have all these young people within one school playing this type of instrument? So he was just intrigued, and he found it quite unusual.
Ah, so you see, you are stirring up a hornet's nest there with all the luminaries of the pipe organ world. Jonathan Scott and a recording of the Radetzky March we made at Manchester's Bridgewater Hall last January, featuring the Marcusson organ, and that was the stage remote console there. And of course, Jonathan is one of many young virtuoso players who do so much to encourage and nurture interest in the pipe organ. Well, during my chat with James, Fiona and Martin, after we had switched off the tape, I mentioned the times, a good few years ago now, when I presented Merseyside organist John Beasley in concert at the Shaw United Reformed Church on his top-of-the-range Yamaha £30,000 ELX1 instrument, with yours truly playing the church's pipe organ, which I think was a Harrison & Harrison. It was a super evening, and from it, here's John with Bulman's Prayer à Notre Dame. the hugely talented John Beasley, who will be appearing at the 2021 Yamaha Club weekend at the De Vere four-star Staverton Estate Hotel in Daventry next month. If you'd like more details of that, then telephone 07842 573 913 on Monday or Thursday mornings. Back after the break.
On air at 99.7 FM and online at oldhamcommunityradio.com, this is Community Keyboards with Ian Wolstenholme.
And welcome back to the programme. We've spoken with James, Fiona and Martin throughout the programme about the many pipe organs that either thrive or just about survive. Of course, there are countless loyal amateur organists who give of their time for Sunday services and events throughout the UK, one of whom is local organist Chris Price, who appeared on the programme some years ago at the time he celebrated half a century at the console in many churches across the region. Well, here's Chris at the organ, which I've had the pleasure of playing several times in Trinity Methodist Church in Royton. The piece is Tuba Tune by C.S. Lang. James, let me just return to you for a moment. I desperately want to tell listeners more about the film, but we can't, really. It would be very unfair, because we'd have to give the whole plot away. But the documentary, it's received much critical acclaim, because I know you've been going round the various film festivals. I know from your original email, too, that you've been knocked back by the BBC. We touched on this earlier, I guess, in a roundabout way. And others as well, for that matter, who seem to have this negative impression of the organ full stop. Can you tell me some of the reaction to the production that you've had elsewhere? And I suppose the all-important question, when and how can people actually get to see your documentary?
Yes, Ian. Well, you're right about the BBC. I did approach them with the idea, and they sort of... I knew they would see it as a marginal and an obscure type of film, and I think that is their reaction to sum it up. They couldn't see an audience for it, which I think is sad, but that's what that's the impression they had. Mm. I think that's anything to do with the organist's sound. That's how they feel, really. But in the organ world, I've had a very different reaction when I've talked to people about it and shown them little clips of the film. They've got excited. I know that we're planning to take it to the Leeds International Organ Festival and St. Albans International Festival, said they're interested in screening it alongside the performances. And as you say, film festivals have taken an interest. So it's pretty good. I think in the organ world, it struck a nerve. because that people know about this problem with pipe organs, and when they see it, they say, yes, that is what's going on. And I think they respond in a very strong way.
And we've got a link, and thank you for sharing that with us, James, that we'll pass on to listeners. We'll give them a chance to get their pens and paper to hand, because it always happens that we'll say, here's the link, and then they go, oh, I can't write it down, I've got nothing to scribble on. So we'll do that at the end of the programme. But I guess that, and I suppose this is a question for everybody, so please feel free to chip in. You're planning a roadshow type of event. These were very popular, I remember, in the 80s and 90s with sort of well-established electronic and certain pipeless organ manufacturers to peddle their new products around here and there. But what's that all about? And of course, I guess it's going to be subject to restrictions, if there are any, more imposed with the virus. But the roadshow, tell us a little bit about the thinking behind that.
Well, Martin and I thought that because he's a great talker about how he can talk to people about the instrument. If we go along to a place where an instrument's under threat, he can have a look at it. He can talk to the people who care about that instrument about trying to keep it going. And maybe at the same time, we can show the film and we could have a recital. You know, so we thought, so it could be a place, you could put this film anywhere, really. You could have it in a big cathedral and in a little church. Anywhere where there's an instrument or anywhere where there's an audience, I think it would create a kind of a conversation, really. Yeah. And Martin's trust and the trust that we're trying to set up will also be part of that, because if people want to join that and see if they can help save pipe organs, that'll help. That'll all be part of the same thing. And we're hoping that the IAO will help us take, because there's lots of organist associations around the country. That's one of our main ideas, is to try and talk to them and see whether or not we can set up a series of screenings. I mean, these screenings could be live, or we're thinking also of doing virtual ones as well, have screenings online as well.
Yeah, because I guess people have become used to the online alternatives with the restrictions, obviously, that have been imposed during this past 18 months or so. I think you mentioned there a trust, a charity that you're trying to get off the ground with the aim of rescuing these valuable instruments. Will you be the sort of RSPCA for organs?
Not exactly, I think. It's much wider than that. I think we've got to spread the net quite widely. I think the most important thing is actually just to make sure organs are maintained and kept in working order. But at the same time, as I say, we need to push up the public profile. So my great scheme at the moment, and everyone else thinks it's mad, but it's actually beginning to work, is to put organs in railway stations, for instance. You know, there are pianos in railway stations, at least there were until recently. They were taken out, I think, because they're trying to stop people transmitting COVID through the keyboards or something. And in fact, I am talking at the moment by email to the chair of Network Rail.
Really? Well, good grief.
Yeah. Well, I always believe in starting at the top. And they are very interested. We need to find sponsors for some of the organs, but because one idea is to put new organs on forecourts, which can be remotely controlled, and so they don't interfere with announcements and so on. But like the pianos, we can put smaller organs in the undercrofts of stations, or if there's a separate foyer or something like that, and just get them into the public domain, because everybody goes through railway stations or bus stations or even Battersea Power Station, for goodness sake, when it's all completely done. These are the sort of, and museums, and these are the sort of places we need to put organs, where people are going to fall over them and they're going to hear them and they want to hear them. I mean, I've worked a bit in National Trust houses restoring organs, and there, whenever you actually play an organ or a piano, then people stop and listen and say, oh, isn't it lovely to hear the instrument we've just been looking at? Because a musical instrument is absolutely dead unless it makes a noise. And this is happening all over the churches. The instruments are just sitting there, not doing very much. And we need to get them making a noise again. It's going to be the only way of getting it up the public profile. So we've got to think of all sorts of inventive ways to do that. And well, we're in the middle of setting all that up, and we'll see how we go. I hope it'll be very much a grassroots thing, because we, like with saving Britain's heritage in terms of buildings, it's information from the grassroots as to what's going on that actually helps with campaigns, because you can only do a certain amount, as it were, from the top or from the centre. You can help, but you don't know exactly what's happening and you don't know the local circumstances.
Ian, if you don't mind, we'll give a plug for it. We're hoping to call it Pipe Up for Pipe Organs. It's going to be the name of the organisation. It'll have an online presence.
Yes.
And people can Google it and jot down and write into us and explain, you know, talk to us about their local situation. And also, I think we'll be able to book in, hopefully, the roadshow. And I'm very much hoping Fiona might be able to come along for some of those as well. She's very busy, some of the contributors to the film will be present as well. So I hope we'll have a lively conversation with people.
What you three very, very generous people are doing, and you may or may not realise it, because I can look at this as an outsider looking in almost, but what you three are doing is really resurrecting and putting in some wonderful new interesting ideas in the pipe organ world, long overdue. We've had the pandemic, which has obviously been the blight of everything. But even before that, some might say that the pipe organ world was, shall we say, not as buoyant as perhaps it once was. So I think what you're doing is exceptional. Anything that we can do here on Community Keyboards to drive it forward, we'll be happy to do. Thank you for joining me on the line today. I'm so pleased that Zoom held out despite all the challenges that it's been put through in recent months. And James, Martin and Fiona, thank you very much for explaining everything about the good work that you're doing. And as I said before, more power to your elbow, and we'll keep in touch and we'll keep an eagle eye on this. It sounds extremely exciting. Thanks for being on the programme today.
Thanks, Ian.
Thank you.
You too.
good friend from Oldham, organist Wayne Marshall, playing just a small part of one of his many improvisations, in that instance a tribute to the late Christopher Plummer, star of The Sound of Music, who died in February last, and that was played on the organ of St Paul's Anglican Cathedral in Valletta in Malta, where Wayne now resides. Now, let me give you those details of the documentary, etc. So if you go online and type in https://vimeo.com/on-demand/organstops. From there, you'll be able to watch the trailer, and there are details how to subscribe to view the full documentary. It is absolutely fascinating, and yes, you might even need a box of Kleenex, so you've been warned. Details of the Pipe Up for Pipe Organs Trust will be available soon, so do keep a lookout for that on the programme's website or the Facebook page. Just search for Community Keyboards. Well, I do hope you've enjoyed this show. It will be concert time on the next edition, but for the moment, this is Ian Wolstenholme saying thanks very much for listening. Take care, all the best, and bye-bye.